Are you ready to become a better version of yourself, to become a leader in your personal and professional life? Then welcome to the CJ Evolution Podcast, where we put a twist on traditional criminal justice professions and provide you with the tools you need to set yourself up for success in your career and for the future. Now, welcome your host, the CJ Evolutionist himself, Patrick Fitzgibbons.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Episode 241. Of the ever-growing CJ Evolution Podcast. Ever-growing because of you, the listener and supporter. Thank you for tuning in. You have many options out there. There's a lot of criminal justice podcasts out there. You have many choices, but I thank you for spending a little bit of your valuable time with me. Pat Fitzgibbons here. I'm the host and creator of this great podcast. Thank you for tuning in. Special thanks to all those first responders out there, brave men and women, who work in the criminal justice field. I don't care what you're doing out there. Maybe you're a deputy. Maybe you're working in corrections, a defense attorney, working for the prosecution. Whatever you are doing, thank you for tuning in to the show. And if you're a first-time listener, welcome. We hope you stick around. We have some great episodes out there, a lot more great episodes to come. If you're a long-time listener, welcome back. You know, folks, I am super excited to be partnered with Four Sigmatic. This is an amazing coffee company offering some amazing products, most notably their mushroom coffee. No, it's not the mushrooms that make you see pink elephants. It's the good mushrooms, and you're going to love their products. They have coffees, elixirs. Again, their mushroom coffee and other coffee, if you don't like the mushroom coffee. Head over to cjevolution.com. You're going to see a link to Four Sigmatic. You're going to get 15% off of all your purchases using the promo code CJEBO. You know, folks, I have said this many, many times before in the past, and I'm going to keep saying it going forward, that I am so honored and blessed to have had some of the most inspiring and successful guests on the show. And stay tuned, because we have more of the same coming up in the very near future. But I'm always so excited to have another successful podcaster on the show. My next guest you're going to love. He's risen through the ranks to help lead one of the biggest departments in California, the San Francisco Police Departments. He has had a very, very successful career. He's retired now, but he also is the co-host of a very successful law enforcement podcast called Policing Matters. So grab a pen and paper and soak in the wisdom and the knowledge from this next amazing guest. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. I am very excited to have my next guest on the show. His name is Jim Dudley. He's a 32-year veteran of the San Francisco Police Department, where he retired as the deputy chief of the patrol bureau. He's also he also consults for a variety of law enforcement agencies around the country, and he also is the co-host of a very popular and ever-growing podcast called Policing Matters for Police One. Are you there, sir?
Yes, I am.
Well, thank you for coming on the show, Jim. I know you're very, very busy, and I don't know if I gave you enough justice with that bio. You want to fill in any blanks there?
No, the rest is all bad news. I enjoyed a 32-year career. I'm a big police advocate. I love keeping my hand in the field, and teaching is a great outlet for me. Mm-hmm. It keeps me fresh and abreast on the topics, and I love the energy from the students.
You have a master's degree in criminology and social ecology for the University of California, and it's interesting, and you know how we're both teaching the next generation of law enforcement professionals.
Right, it's very fulfilling.
Yeah, and do you find it difficult to be teaching a younger generation, as I do sometimes, you know, teaching the millennials, even though a large percentage of the workforce now is millennials? I think it's like 80 million.
Right. Well, San Francisco State is a liberal institution, and we try to teach and talk about both sides of the criminal justice issue. But every once in a while, I come across some students that are just, you know, the rhetoric has been beaten into them. Yeah. And that cops are bad, and people need to get out of jail because nobody should be there, and the gamut. So it's difficult to deal with them sometimes, and I try to go back to the facts and go to real good news, not mm-hmm. so much fake news, to verify sources, look at websites that are .gov and .edu, and I really stress the research.
Yeah, because you make up a good point. It's so many, and I don't want to just pick on young people, but a lot of people out there seem to get their information just at first glance without doing any type of research, like you indicated, and getting the facts, which is kind of disturbing when you think about it. I mean, the majority of officers out there, you know, Jim, I'm preaching to the choir, are good people. They're doing a good job in a very difficult environment. And the vast majority of officers out there, again, sir, you know this, they deal with people all day. And a very, very small percentage of those interactions result in any type of use of force.
Right. And I think, you know, we can go back to the stereotype of the millennial, and you know, their attention span are 30 to 60 second sound bites and social media news, and you know, crimes are solved in 30 minutes on TV without commercials and so on. But I think when they really start looking at the issues and do some deep dives, their eyes are widened, and they become aware of things that they hadn't been before.
Now, what, kind of changing gears a little bit, sir, what made you become a police officer? What was the catalyst? Did you always want to become an officer from when you were young, or was there something that in your life that happened that made you say, hey, I want to go serve and I want to be a police officer?
Well, over 40 years ago, growing up in San Francisco, growing up poor, one of half a dozen kids, in inner city San Francisco, one of the role models I looked up to was the local policeman. And my idea was to get a job where I could work outside and do problem solving and help people. And that was what I saw in San Francisco at the time. And it was a different time period. There was violence and civil rights movement. And we had the Zodiac and the Zebra murders. And I thought it would be a great opportunity to become a policeman. Mm-hmm. And that was my focus in high school and college. And I got into the policing at age 22 and never looked back.
And it was you had a great career. And I'm sure you've seen a lot, like you said, you saw a lot of changes throughout your career. I mean, what are some of the big changes, Jim, that you've, I mean, we could probably go on days talking about some of the changes that you've seen over your many decades in law enforcement. But what are some of the biggest significant changes you've seen in law enforcement?
Well, clearly technology is the biggest change.
Yeah.
We didn't have mobile vehicle terminals, MVTs, in the vehicles when
body cams
when I first started. Body cams or pepper spray. I mean, we had tear gas. We had CS, right? We had a baton and a gun and handcuffs, and that was about it. The radios were pretty limited in our radio cars. The personal radios, our PIC radios, were pretty limited. But now we're getting so much information, maybe even to the point of an information overload. When you have analytics that are just giving us so much information at once. I've heard tales of the ALPRs, the license plate readers, that are, you know, officers in the Bay Area can't get, you know, five blocks without hitting on a stolen car that's probably parked, but it's going to take up 30 minutes or so of their time. So I've heard tales. I couldn't tell you who did it on purpose, but people are turning those things off so they can get to a radio call.
Yeah. And I wouldn't doubt that, just because it just seems like we're becoming, at least where I'm at, we're just becoming more and more busy. You know, the call loads are going up. You're well aware of, you know, the opiate, you know, epidemic that is all around the country.
Right.
And that has contributed. I think we have a 29% increase in my agency over the last year in calls for service. And not that it's right what the officers are doing, turning off the license plate readers, but yeah, they're just trying to get to the call and they're trying to keep up.
Right. And I think, you know, there are some positive innovations. I think the dash cam, I'm an advocate of the body cam. I like the idea of a taser, but in San Francisco, we still don't have tasers issued to the police department.
Wow.
Several agencies within the city, the rapid transit system, The sheriff's office and some other agencies have tasers, but it is a political hot potato in San Francisco, and the supervisors and the mayors have not seen the benefit of having an intermediate weapon between a baton and a gun.
That just is amazing to me, since
isn't it?
That yeah. It's why wouldn't you want that intermediate weapon? I mean, all you have is a baton or lethal force. Why wouldn't you want that taser?
Well, I think there's an unreasonable expectation of police having this magic wand, and mm-hmm. De-escalation seems to be one of the magic wands. And as you know, we're relying on the suspect's behavior to cooperate in a situation where we're going to try to de-escalate. Mm-hmm. And so if we put a suspect in a bubble and say, okay, you stay right there, we'll stay right here, and we're going to negotiate, there's an expectation that they're not going to advance on us if they're armed with a weapon. So, you know, that is an unreasonable expectation. And you have elected officials making use of force policy for law officers that are then expected to go deal with deranged people on the street, people that are drunk, under the influence of drugs, or mentally ill. And they are combative, and they may have already used force, and they are trying to use force on you, and you've been given these unreasonable restrictions.
That is ridiculous. Probably coming from the same people, Jim, that think that it's easier to kind of shoot the weapon out of somebody's hand.
Haven't you done that?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably coming from the same people that thinking that's a reality. That
right.
You know, they watch movies and television shows, and they say, well, hey, you know, they've done it on TV and the movies. Why can't law enforcement do it? And you know, obviously,
right.
that it's not realistic.
Right.
What do you think? I mean, I know you hit on some of the challenges, especially in San Francisco. What other challenges do you think law enforcement is facing going into the future? We talked a little bit off the air, and I don't want to beat up on millennials. But you know, kind of training and kind of educating and teaching the newer officers that are coming into the field. What other challenges do you see out there for law enforcement as we go forward?
Well, we can alphabetize if you'd like. But, I think, you know, some of the biggest challenges are clearly the unreasonable expectation regarding use of force. Mm-hmm. That is a national problem. The fentanyl epidemic mixed in with the opioids are now a threat to law enforcement officers mm-hmm. who show up on the scene, who may come in physical contact with it. So that's something I didn't have to deal with 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And officers are getting sick and debilitated by just contact mm-hmm. with fentanyl. Recruitment, whether it's millennials or the fact that we just have a great economy right now, and unemployment is at all-time lows, and when that happens, people are less likely to take on something risky like law enforcement. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and now we're fighting pensions, and that is going to be another hurdle in hiring somebody. It used to be that pensions were a great carrot to get somebody to come on board. When you have these other jobs that may be quite lucrative at the beginning, but don't really have outside of a 401k or a personal savings plan, mm-hmm. don't really have a retirement system. So in those ways, law enforcement is still a great job to have.
Yeah.
The flexibility of working outside, the ability to problem solve, the discretion that you have, those are all great things. I think one of the other biggest problems facing law enforcement are just politics.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've seen movements across the country where we know that Terry versus Ohio, a Terry stop, a stop based on reasonable suspicion, is still valid. And yet if you package it as stop and frisk, people are up in arms and it is just totally unreasonable.
Mm-hmm.
I see problems with stop and frisk because we got out of the mandatory articulation of why we stop somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. That defeated stop and frisk. But Terry stops are real. They are valid. If officers have the reasonable suspicion, they should be able to use that tool. As far as use of force, it's been hammered in the media, in social media. Anytime there's a high profile incident regarding use of force or deadly use of force, it becomes a moral panic. Mm-hmm. And we've just seen with the Laquan McDonald case that the officer was found guilty of murder. And that's the first time, I believe, in 50 years.
That's the Chicago case.
The Chicago case. And yeah. So you can expect people to rally around and say, hey, why don't we do this more? In California, there was a move afoot just a few months ago to change the use of force threshold from reasonable, objective reasonableness in the use of force to change it to necessary force.
Yeah.
And if that were to happen, thankfully, the Senate bill failed. But if it had happened, then it would have put a tighter restriction on law enforcement officers to actually wait until force was used against them before they could cite unnecessary use of form. So, or use of force. So if you were to say, the guy pointed a gun at me, so I shot him, and then you found out it was a squirt gun or a replica gun, or a simulated gun, then the officer may be on the hot seat for using force that clearly wasn't necessary, as seen by the Monday morning quarterbacks.
Yeah, it just amazes me that, you know, we're having these discussions today. And clearly, you know, Jim, that there's bad shootings out there. There are bad use of force incidents out there. But I think that those are in the minority. Think of, you know, preaching to the choir. For those of you listening out there, think about how many altercations or how many, you know, situations officers get into, thousands and tens of thousands every day. How many of those result in use of force? A very, very small percentage. And I think a very small percentage of use of force, like I just said, you know, is a bad shoot or bad use of force. The vast majority are justified. I just don't know. I mean, I guess my question to you is, what's law enforcement going to look like, you know, 10, 15 years from now? You know, I mean, what?
Well, I think we're moving with technology to yeah. use things like facial recognition and more biometrics that'll help us catch the offender more. But, you know, the old saying goes, you know, we only catch them, we don't cook them or clean them. Yeah. And we've moved to this almost catch and release system yeah. of catching the offender.
But we have to give the officers the benefit of the doubt out in the field. You know,
Right. So now we're moving to pretty certain terms like DNA evidence. And I love if you've been following the Golden State Killer in California, he was caught using DNA, not from him, mm-hmm. but from his ancestors yeah. using a public database for DNA. And, you know, I think that's a breakthrough. Yeah. I think the DNA breakthroughs that we've had in the last year are similar to the discovery of fingerprints, you know, yeah. 100 years ago.
Yeah. I think law enforcement out there, I know you probably think this too, Jim. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you're pro law enforcement, obviously. I think law enforcement is doing a tremendous job out there. What do you think some of the things that law enforcement is doing right?
Oh, I think, you know, if you look at the homicide rates across the country, the homicide rates are looking pretty good. In a city like San Francisco, 850,000 people, maybe a million when the daylight hits, we're averaging 50 to 70 homicides a year. Mm-hmm. In the larger communities in Chicago and Detroit and Baltimore, New York, you're still seeing the triple digits, you know, 300, 400, 700 homicides a year. I think we're doing something right in keeping those numbers low. I think police do a good job with the cases that they have, that they get the cooperation from the prosecutors, their local prosecutors. But we're fighting this mentality that says we've got to empty our prisons. So mm-hmm. I think as good as police agencies are operating in violent crime, they're still shoveling sand against the tide of you know, offender as victim, this new yeah. offender as victim mentality.
And I think I read an article, the governor out there, Jerry Brown, wants to release a bunch of people from prison.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it stemmed from a lawsuit that said that we were overcrowded and mm-hmm. the medical aid to prisoners was no good. So in order to alleviate the 300% occupancy, there were some drastic measures to release a lot of people. But, I mean, we've decriminalized personal use of narcotics, and that is that's going to move east. That's going to take that policy is going to take hold across the country. Mm-hmm. And I'm no prophet. I'm just saying government agencies, not just police departments, but mayor's offices are saying, hey, we are saving a ton of money by not going after people with personal amounts of narcotics and putting them in jail and trying through court. All those things add up, and we could streamline our budgets by just saying, with a harm reduction attitude, we're going to wipe felony narcotics possessions off the table.
But that is a double-edged sword. You know that. That's a political hot button, hot potato. I mean,
tell me about it. I'm living in the petri dish here.
I mean, to have that mentality and not realize that there, you know, there's a huge recidivism rate. I'm not saying all these people that get released, but a large percentage of them, you know the numbers, Jim, are probably going to reoffend, and they're going to be right back into the system.
Well, let me ask you this. How's marijuana working for you out in Colorado?
You know, that's a great question. And you know what? I get asked that a lot. And I'm going to tell you, and I can only speak for my agency and my municipality, it hasn't been the problem that people thought it would be. Hmm. We just haven't seen, you know, we have more problems with alcohol, Jim, than we ever have with marijuana. And we have problems with heroin. Again, we have issues sometimes with marijuana, but it's not as bad as people think.
Hmm. That's interesting. So I understand that we're never going to eliminate the black markets, even mm-hmm. in states where it's legal. Mm-hmm. But I went to the IACP Drug Recognition Expert mm-hmm. Conference in Nashville a couple months ago, and the marijuana-related DUIs seem to be increasing. Mm-hmm. But now we go back to statistics and looking at something with facts. And I think if you look at the influence of Uber and Lyft, maybe people are getting in those conveyances rather than getting behind the wheel. But I think we still will see the increase in DUIs related to marijuana.
Well, we see that. We've seen an uptick, but it's not as huge as some people might think. I mean, most of it is alcohol-based. I mean, now we do have some, we call them DUIDs here in Colorado, driving under the influence of drugs. But it's not, you know, it's not the it hasn't been a huge uptick like some people think.
Huh.
Yeah, at least where I'm at. Now, I can't speak for Denver or Aurora or anybody else, but I could just speak from where I'm at.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
Yeah. Now, let's switch gears a little bit. I want you to talk about Police One, because you and Doug Wiley host an amazing podcast, Policing Matters, for Police One. And what got you started in the podcasting world?
Well, Doug was the editor for Police One at the time, and Police One was looking to expand the medium and get the word out. And there were not a lot of podcasts dealing, mm-hmm. you know, we started over 2 years ago, and there weren't a lot out there mm-hmm. talking about the issues. And I love listening to podcasts. I love, one of my personal favorites is Serial.
Oh, yeah.
It's maddening sometimes.
I listen to that too.
Listening to it. Oh, my gosh. But, you know, why not? Why not start it? Now there's a glut of them out there.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I love your show. I listen to it all the time. I think we still need the different perspectives out there. I think it's hilarious that, you know, in San Francisco, I'm considered pretty conservative. But looking at the notes of the people who listen to our podcast, one guy remarked that I've got to stop listening to the show. These guys are so liberal. And I laughed when I read that. But it just goes to show you, you know, everything's relative. And, you know, I do believe in harm reduction policies to a point. And I don't like to see needle giveaways to the point where we're giving out 8 million and officers are getting needle stuck and they are having to take a concoction of antibiotics and viral medications so that they don't get sick and die.
Yeah.
And I think we're at that point. I mean, you know, you off air, you referred to the Starbucks case that was reported where some of their employees are getting stuck just from needles in the trash. Mm-hmm. And that shouldn't be.
Yeah.
That shouldn't be.
Yeah. We were talking a little bit about, and I've been doing this not as long as you have, sir. I've been only doing it about 23 years, but I never thought, and it's not a bad thing, I guess, that we're carrying Narcan now. But I never thought we would come to a point in our careers or law enforcement officers would be carrying Narcan. Again, it's not a bad thing that we're carrying that, but I just never thought we'd see that.
No, but it is sort of indicative of where policing is today. Mm-hmm. I always joke that when we start talking about what cops carry in their cars, that we should start putting Thule racks on top. Because, I mean, if you think about all the things, Narcan is a small packet,
oh, exactly.
Right? But you've got a first aid kit, a tourniquet, a shotgun, a patrol rifle, an extended range impact. You've got an AED. You've got extra gloves, ammo, flashlight batteries, pick batteries, rollout tape, crime scene tape, crime scene evidence kits, just on and on and on. And cops, every time there's a new moral panic or a new issue, cops are the government representative in uniform every day. Cops can deal with it.
And the one thing.
And
I
was just going to say that, you know, dealing with, you asked about what are the big problems facing law enforcement. I think cops dealing with mentally ill just should not be. That if I were the chief of a department, I would give $1 million to my local hospital to say, give me three mental health clinicians who would do some emergency ride along with cops so they could be deployed in the field. I hate the idea that cops are expected to deal with the mentally ill and have good outcomes. Because, well, as you know, it usually turns to violence, mm-hmm. and the cops turn out to be the bad guys. Well, I think they're put in an awful situation.
Yeah, and I agree with you 100%. But you know as well as I do, Jim, it comes down to a money issue and who's going to pay for it.
Right. But, I mean, if the elected officials really see a problem, then they should call some budget money to get some rolling professionals on the street besides cops to deal with the mentally ill.
And again, that was another made me think about it when you just said that. You know, now you know what CIT is, where we're going through, sending officers through crisis intervention, and that's good training. But back to your point, you know, officers, I think in my agency, and you probably saw it when in San Francisco, you know, I mean, I can't remember, I don't know what the percentage is, but a certain percentage, a large percentage, is us going to calls involving the mentally ill.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not slowing down.
No. If anything, it's probably getting worse. I mean, mental health issues, alcohol and drugs, I mean, that's probably 70% or more of related to calls for service for cops today.
Yeah. Well, what about what's next for you, sir? You got your podcast. I know you're teaching. You're helping educate the next generation. What about a book? I see a book in your future, Jim.
Well, you know, I'm writing articles for Police One. Mm-hmm. I have a column called Under Oath, and I've been asked to contribute to some e-magazines. We talked about critical incidents. We talked about, you know, where we are a year after the Las Vegas incident. Mm-hmm. I enjoy that. You know, writing a book sounds too much like work.
You're retired.
I'd be happy to contribute to an anthology or something like that. But yeah, no.
Well, you're doing great work at Police One. For those of you listening out there, I know a lot of departments out there, mine included, we utilize Police One Training Academy, which is awesome.
Yeah, it's great.
We help that supplements our hours that we need for the state. Jim Dudley, thank you so much for coming on the show, sir. I know you're very, very busy, but I appreciate all the work you're doing for the next generation of law enforcement professionals and, of course, what you're doing. I know you do some assessments for law enforcement too, correct?
Yeah. We've done a couple big city and smaller departments and sheriff's departments, and I really enjoy doing the work. Talking to people, you can't be talking to a cop.
No.
And anybody who passes by a coffee with a cop and doesn't stop in to chat, they don't know what they're missing.
Yeah.
and I love talking to cops and hearing what they have to say about the issues that they're facing today. My own two sons are policemen in San Francisco. Shows you that, you know, I'm much more than an advocate. And I think, you know, today's officers are doing a job that we didn't do. Yeah. 30 years ago, 20 years ago, they're doing a great job shifting with the way that things are changing.
And I always tell officers out there and my audience, and I'm sure you, and I know I've heard you and Doug say it many, many times in your podcast, that there's much support out there for law enforcement. I know it doesn't seem like it sometimes. It gets drowned out by people out there in organizations, but there's millions and millions of people out there that support law enforcement.
Yep, the silent majority.
Exactly. Well, sir, any final thoughts before we take off?
Patrick, I appreciate it. I love the show. I love you getting the word out, the good word. I wish there was more we could do for the cops out there.
We're doing it right now. We're supporting them out there, and we're talking about some issues. And thank you for coming on the show, sir. I sure do appreciate it, and I hope you have a wonderful evening.
You too. Thanks, Patrick.
All righty.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.